some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Today is October 18th, 2011. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and joined today by our special co-host, Dave Broderick of Blind Tiger, all the way from Barnard, Vermont.
Hey, Jimmy.
How are you, Dave?
Good, man. How you doing?
Dave, let's give a shout-out. Let's thank our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. Anything you can recommend about GreatBrewers.com?
No. Yeah. Well, they've always got great stuff. I mean, they're always... They're in today.
Events know. And...
Yeah. I mean, there's just... They
education.
They've got like the biggest portfolio of anybody.
And the Great Brewers test.
Yeah.
Have you taken the Great Brewers 100 test?
I did. I'm not going to tell you how I did.
Come on. You got to tell me.
No, actually, I didn't take the 100. I didn't. No? I did like the short version. I think I got like everything except one right.
We got some smart beer people here too. We got Emily and Matt Garland from Tap Craft Beer Events. And John Kleinchester from Beertography.
How you doing?
Did you guys take the Great Brewers 100 test at all?
I have not yet.
No, I have not, no.
You haven't? Well, you should go to greatbrewers.com and take the 100 test.
It's a good
awesome.
Test. So there's some good questions on there.
It's the model for the Cicerone program, too. So
sounds like a purity test.
I got a 72, but that was with notes.
That's just like high school and college for you.
But that was before we did Beer Sessions Radio. And also shout out to Good Beer Seal. GoodBeerSeal.com.
That's us. That's us.
Arps us, buddy. New York City Good Beer Bars. All right. So we're going to create a cool show tonight. It is the middle of Cider Week. It's just started on Sunday at New Amsterdam Market. There was a rally of all these northeastern farm-made ciders, hard ciders. When we say ciders, we mean hard ciders.
Right.
And Dave, you're a little bit of a cider maker yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, we've been – I've got 16 200-year-old trees up on my farm, and I don't even know what the varietals are because they're so old. But we've been bringing them back for the last 2 years since we've owned the place and pressing them. A friend of mine has a 1908 hydraulic press, and we've also got a hand press just if we want to do a single tree and see what it tastes like by itself. And I filled up a keg for the first time, a gravity cask, and brought it down. It's on at the Tiger right now as we speak. We just tapped it at 3 p.m.
Well, last week we had a Christian Drouin
yes.
From Normandy, France, and he's like one of those old-time masters of ciders. John, from Beertography, do you do anything on your site about ciders?
I have not done much on cider, no, but the show last week has convinced me to get into cider and try to learn more about it, because I don't know very much.
Yeah, go to ciderweek.com. There's some good stuff. John, tell us more about Beertography, because I've met you a few times, and frankly, I've never been to your site.
That's okay. Basically, it started because I had... I'd noticed that I had amassed a ton of beer photos just of my own, where I was just taking pictures of every single beer that I was drinking, and it got to be a little ridiculous. So I figured, why not share that with people? So I started just posting my photos online on my site, usually just with a little caption, just saying, you know, whatever, this is this beer. And then it just kept going and going, and people started sending me their beer photos. So I sort of switched gears and let users submit photos, and then I would feature their photos on the site. And now that's the main feature, but then I also sprinkle in my own little writings here and there, and I cover local events and stuff like that.
Great. Dave, any favorite beer sites that you check out?
Well, obviously, you know, just the usual Beer Advocate, Rate Beer. And whenever I'm doing, like, I'm sure you do the same thing when you're doing your menus and you're doing descriptions for events and stuff like that. Actually, whenever I go to a lot of these sites, I always see that you've been there first. That Jimmy Carboni likes this site.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you're like all over the web. And it always cracks me up. But yeah, there's like Full Pint, I think. Is that? Or Half Pint? Something. You know it. You're there all the time.
Emily, what about you? You seem to be... You guys do tapped craft beer events. Tell us about that.
So Matt and I host private and corporate beer tastings. We're loving doing it. We're doing them around the New York City area. We started up in January. We're basically evangelizing craft beer, getting people excited about it. It's a great time.
Yeah, one thing I like about them is they're reaching people that you and I don't always reach, which is, it's like company parties and stuff, people that aren't so familiar and might not come into Jimmy's 43 because they're scared of you or
stuff
or
like
your beer list.
Williams Club of New York and Soriano's of Parkside, New Jersey.
See?
That is correct. Exactly. Yeah, alumni clubs, corporate events, birthday parties, bachelor parties.
Ooh. The best. How about bachelorette parties?
Bachelorette parties. We have male hosts for that.
The best part, Dave, to your point, it's like it's really interesting when people say, I can't believe this is a beer. It's like the flavors, and you know, that's the best, because normally we get hired by people in a company or whatever that are a beer person potentially, or someone that wants to show their coworkers or whatever. But most of the people that come to the event are really very new to it, so it's great.
So, like, how do you set it up so that it's easy for them and they can really learn as much as they possibly can in like 2 hours or however much time they have?
Yeah, we have. So what we do is kind of curate the menu. So we work with the client to basically say, okay, well, what types of beers do you want, or how do you want to, you know, how do you want it to be, whether you want New York beers only, or a particular style, Oktoberfest or whatever. We basically do a few things. We have four beer hosts, people in the beer scene, Chris O'Leary, Brew York New York, Jonathan Moxie, Carolyn Edgecombe, a few others. And basically what we do is usually do 5 or 7 beers. We'll set out these placemats, or depending on how the event is structured, we'll do either like a seated and structured tasting or mix and mingle. But either way, we kind of give people information and let them make their own calls and decisions on the beer. We'll kind of guide them through what they're tasting and teach them about beer as it goes along.
What are some of the beers that are most popular at these events?
Local beers. People are really excited about New York State, New York City beers. It's by far most popular package, which we personally love to do. So we like to get people turned on to not only some of the larger breweries around the state, but even some of the smaller nano ones like Greenport Harbor. And we brought Bolero Snort, for example, they're out of New Jersey, but they're small and just starting up.
Yeah.
We brought 4 of their different beers. This is a guy, Bob Olson, that's just going through the process of getting things started. I'll start with his like standard long hop.
Dave, you know, since you've been last here, we started something new on the show. It's called the Live Beer Pour Cam. So you'll see. When you pour the beer, pour it in front of the microphone.
This place just
each beer
more
has
and
a unique sound.
It's a new iPhone feature.
Yes.
So this is his.
Did you hear that? No, you gotta pour it again. Come on.
I gotta pour it again.
Pour another one.
All right, pour another one.
That was a really bad pour, too.
Sorry about
that. Nah, we gotta work
a little
on
bit.
Your pouring skills.
Yeah, I'm supposed to
so
be
it's called the Live
this,
Beer
right?
Pour Cam.
I love that.
Yeah.
Where's the cam?
It's very bubbly.
In the microphone.
Oh, yeah. I see. Okay.
For when
that's
we go
why video. I didn't see.
Yeah, when we go video.
This is his standard, like, IPA called Long Hop. We also brought a Roggenbach. We brought a lagered red-brown hybrid. And one other that's escaping.
We'll see.
Me.
They we'll like see. To make unusual beers.
Who wants to try?
I do.
It around, sure. Right. So where did you find this beer?
We met Bob out and about doing events around the city, just going to like Jimmy's Number 43 at bars and stuff. We ran into him and got to know him and tried his beers and loved them. And we said, hey, we have to introduce other people to them.
Well, it's pretty good.
What's the name of the brewery again? It's Bolero what?
Bolero Snort Brewery.
It's like
snort,
a bull.
As in a snorting bull?
Yeah.
Exactly. A Bolero wearing bull.
Where is he in New Jersey?
He's in,
Bergen County?
Bergen County. Oh, Ridgefield Park, I think. It's basically an anagram on his name, Robert Olson. So he did an anagram maker and found Bolero Snort. So there you go.
Wow. Hey, John, have you seen a lot of, you do the photos of beers and all that, blah, blah, blah. Beertography. I love it, man.
Yeah. It's not beer photos, it's beertography.
Beertography. Have you guys seen a lot of labels or bottles from New Jersey breweries?
Submitted to me?
Yeah.
There's a pretty big following of mine from New Jersey. It's basically New York, New Jersey, because I live in New Jersey, but I work in New York. So I'm sort of going back and forth to all the craft beer events at both places. But yeah, get a lot of I've featured Bolero Snort before, too. He's a great brewer. So
that's what I'm trying to get to, because so many of our listeners and our customers in New York live in New Jersey. And so many of the beers we talk about in New York, I don't really know that many New Jersey beers.
There's a bit of a renaissance going on with New Jersey breweries. It's sort of exploding right now. Before, you know, a couple of years ago, there weren't that many great beer bars. There weren't that many great beer breweries, but now you've got New Jersey Beer Company, you've got Flying Fish is expanding, and yeah, there's a ton of little nano breweries like Cape May.
We should do a show
company.
On that.
It would
a great
be
a, idea.
You know? It'd be a great subject because mm-hmm. there's a ton, a really huge amount.
Great.
Cool.
Yeah, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else you got from them?
Let's see. We got Secret Agent Stout, which is a stout aged on cocoa nibs and ancho chilies. We got their BS World Series, which is a rye beer, but he it's a Rogan beer, actually, so he made it a little smoky. We got Cold Bold Blood, which is a red-brown hybrid, but he took... Normally, he just uses ale yeast, but what he did was he actually got a Belgian lager strain and lagered it. So,
right.
And I just want to point out the bull is wearing a different outfit on each label.
And what size is his brewery? Do you know, like, how big his brew house is?
I think he's just got a 10-gallon system right now. So
10-gallon or 10-barrel?
Yeah. Sorry, 10-barrel. Sorry.
Okay.
I have
a 10-gallon.
Yeah.
No, actually, I take that. I think it actually is still small. I mean, he's just going through the process. He basically is kind of a really intense home brewer right now, and he's working through trying to get everything going.
Oh, so he's not like a commercial brewer yet?
Not yet. He's okay.
On the cusp.
Technically, great. If it says not for sale, so luckily we're not selling it.
Yeah, because we're not paying for these. As far as I know.
And then how would a typical tapped event go? Let's say we're doing the mix and what are the two types you do, mix and greet?
So one would be like a more of a seated educational kind of tasting, very similar to a wine tasting where you'd go through one by one, talk about each beer, the style, what you smell and taste. Or if companies or whatever the group is wants to do something more casual, would feel like an open bar, kind of mix and mingle and move around. So this one, for example, would be perfect with the table for a seated tasting. So you'd have little... tasting notes, talk about each beer one by one, swirl it around, smell it, taste it, talk about what you like about it.
And do you do food pairings as well? Yeah.
Yeah, we've done, we work with a number of like local food companies. So we work with Ovenly out of Brooklyn that provides us desserts. We work with Slant Shack Jerky. We work with some other...
My Friend's Mustard.
My Friend's Mustard. So we work with Anna. And basically what we do is two different things. Basically, we'll either have foods where we like the food, they're all local artisanal foods, and we just kind of have them out so people can eat while they're doing the tasting. But we've also done things like beer and cheese pairings. So we'll sometimes, our client will say, okay, we'd like you actually pair foods with the beers. So in those types of situations, we'll structure it. So, okay, now taste this. But most of the time, it's just we put out a nice spread. And so, yeah, that's how it works.
And how big are the groups that you usually get? Is it like 30 people, 40 people?
We've done as small as 8 and as large as 75.
Wow.
That's the range so far.
And the client chooses the location of where they do it? Or
sometimes it's in their office or in their alumni club, but a lot of times they want help in finding a local bar, restaurant in New York that has a good beer selection, has a nice private room, and we'll set up there.
Jimmy has a nice private room.
He does.
Jimmy's
nice number 43.
He does.
Yeah.
And Dave's, I saw that Blind Tiger's doing a pretty cool pairing this week.
Actually, I did it last night at Perilla. We did a collaboration beer dinner with Harold Dieterle. At Perilla.
And what did you guys do? You paired the beers?
Yeah. So they sent me the menu, and then I paired up the beers with it, and then just did a profile on the beers and why we chose those for the... You know, it was a lot of people that didn't know... you know, how it all works and stuff.
So how did you approach that since maybe they were new to beer, some of the customers? What beers did you pick?
Actually, I didn't like hold back. I mean, I chose what I would want. And so, you know, we started off with a little something and went into Hill Farmstead, Edward, and then Allagash Victor for the roasted cod and Sublimely Self-Righteous for the... The braised short rib, and then
sounds like a good dinner. I missed it.
North Coast Old Stock for the carrot cake with raisin coulis, and it was amazing. I mean, Perilla is one of my favorite restaurants, and right down the street from the Tiger, so I get to go there a decent amount, and it was a great dinner, you know, and people really seemed to like it. It was packed, and people really seemed to like it.
Well, Dave, what do you think about... We have a couple more segments to go. What do you think about this panel we have today?
It's pretty good, man. It's like all over the place.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to grill a new brewery that just came down from Massachusetts on
Beer
Sessions. Something
about shoes. Got a black magic woman. Got a black magic woman. Yes, I got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. That she's a black magic woman and she's trying to make the devil out of me. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Yes, don't turn your back on me, baby. You're messing around with your tricks. Don't turn your back on me, baby, cause you might just break up my magic spell. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, joined tonight with Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger. And thanks to GreatBrewers.com, our sponsor. Check it out, GreatBrewers.com. Wow, we're here with an awesome panel of beer experts. We got Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger. Say your name as we go around here.
John Clanchester from Beertography.
Matt Garland, Tapcraft Beer Events.
Emily Garland, Tapcraft Beer Events.
All right, and we've got somebody here for you guys to tear apart. I know you guys have been waiting to try a new beer. You always want to try the new beer. You know, there's a new kid on the block. He'll give you the introduction. His name's Greg Berman. His beer is called Clown Shoes Beer, and he's already had a controversy because of the name. He's got something called Lubrication, and some people don't like his labels or think he's an amateur. I don't know. Greg, say hello and introduce yourself and tell us what you're doing here.
Hi, I'm Greg Berman. I'm the owner and founder of Clown Shoes Beer out of Massachusetts. We're making beer in Ipswich, which is about 30 minutes north of Boston on the North Shore. And, you know, there are just a few of our beers actually to respond to the controversy that have had any negative feedback on the labels. There's the Brown Angel, which has kind of a sexy brown woman with angel wings in a bikini. And that was the first one to kind of stir things up. Somehow we slipped right in there with Tramp Stamp. And it's a beer that has a lady with a you know, just showing the small of her back with a clown shoes tramp stamp exposed. And we got no flack for that. And the irony is that the third beer, which, I mean, this was our ninth beer that we released, that we got that was potentially provocative, was Lubrication. And the reason I named it that is because I'm constantly talking about lubricating markets. When I travel around the country and I bring my beer to a new market, I feel like it's very necessary to have draft in that market so people can be exposed to it in the bars and have a chance to try it. And maybe they'll go buy it elsewhere or, you know, pick up another pint. You know, and the other aspect is it's an American black ale, so it's dark. And so it's meant to reflect all of the artwork, and the name itself is meant to reflect oil and oil cans. And I specifically gave direction to the artist, go PG on this one. Don't do anything controversial. And yet some folks single it out because the name is, you know, it's kind of a double entendre, and there's the third meaning of lubrication, you know, that people bring in there. But there's a robot on the label of the 22-ounce bottle, and he's holding a gas nozzle, where anyone would hold a gas nozzle, and some people made some suggestions as to why we did that, and it actually wasn't intended in that case. And beyond those three, we have seven other beers that there's nothing on there that's controversial.
So you guys made your name, and you're here in New York now. Dave, you want to ask him a couple questions?
Well, I was going to say, yeah, where did that name come from? Clown Shoes.
Well, I kind of wear a lot of different hats, and one of them is I own a portion of a retail store in Massachusetts, and I had a kid that worked for me, and it was his nickname, and I learned that was his nickname when people were talking about him submitting beers to a beer advocate contest that actually eventually became the Wrath of Pecan. But this kid, his nickname was Clown Shoes, and I found that out right then and there, and he was submitting all these goofy names.
Why was he called Clown Shoes?
Well, he was real goofy. He had not many redeeming qualities other than a passion for beer. And so he was kind of...
like a lot of beer geeks. He's okay.
Yeah, he had some doltish aspects to him. But I thought it was the perfect name. And so I started submitting that name to the Beer Advocate contest with all sorts of anecdotes and stories. And we got rejected. We didn't even make the top five that they voted on. And you know, so one day I was driving along and I was frustrated about that. And it dawned on me, I'm just going to make my own clown
cheese. Just go to commercial.
Beer. Yeah.
Yeah, good. Where do you make your beer?
Well, we're making it at Mercury Brewing. I don't have enough money, unfortunately, to go and you know, buy a brewery to, you know, really make the type of products I want to. So they make a bunch of other products like Cisco and Ipswich, and we're going to be doing some other things up there too. So they've been very accommodating. It's about 30 minutes north of Boston on the North Shore.
And so are you there, like when you're doing batches and stuff, are you there like overseeing the whole process, or how's that work?
Honestly, I'm more of the idea guy. Dan Lipke is the head brewer, and he grew up in the north of England drinking cask beer, and he's very traditional, and by his own admission, he's not super creative. So I come up with a concept, I'll pitch it to him, and we'll get the test batches going. And we've done as few as one and as many as 15, and you know, once we're both happy, we go to the big tanks.
John, have you come across his beers anywhere?
Yeah, well, I haven't seen them because this is, I don't think they're in New Jersey yet, right? This is New York only at this point?
We have a little representation in New Jersey in the Total Wine stores.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the only interaction I've seen so far is where the beer bloggers went nuts with the label stuff, which, I mean, I guess any press is good press in
you know,
some
we were
senses.
selling everything we could make at that point anyway, so... I mean, I guess it was good because a lot of people that hadn't heard of us did, and the people that loved us kind of, you know, they love us more, and the people that hate us, they hate us more, so it's polarizing. I could have done without it, to be honest. That's not what I'm looking for. I know that's what people think, that I'm trying to be provocative, but each label is really about inspiration and, you know, what I'm feeling at that time, and, you know, that's why they're all different. Some are, you know, G-rated, and some are, you know, a little bit provocative, but really not that edgy compared to a lot of other beers that are out there.
Do you like beer, Greg?
Absolutely.
You're serious? You're interested in making beer? Or you're just trying to prove something?
I'm a part owner of a wine distribution company in Massachusetts, and I like wine, but I don't love it. 5 years ago, I got introduced to good quality, particularly American beer, and it blew my mind. And I started trying everything I could get my hands on, and I wanted to, like I'm distributing wine in Massachusetts, I wanted to distribute beer. And everybody I talked to, you know, some of the top people around the country, laughed in my face and didn't want to come to Massachusetts at all, or if they did, they weren't coming with me. So for me, yeah, I just wanted to be a part of this, and I want to be a part of it for as long as I'm working. I love it that much. So it's kind of, I used to sit behind the desk and answer phones and push buttons and be bored out of my mind, and now I'm genuinely engaged in what I do on a day-to-day basis.
Emily, let's go through the panel. Why don't you guys tell me what you think of this beer?
I'm loving it, and I'm actually not typically a huge fan of white ales, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I actually really like this beer. I think it's you know, if you think about kind of what we would do in the beers that we serve, we try to like mix things up a little bit, but this is something that could be a very easy drinking beer for a person that's kind of new to craft beer and wants to try it. So I think this is great.
John?
Yeah, I'd have to echo that. What's the ABV on this?
6%.
6%. So it's a perfect sessionable beer. Seems really good to me.
Definitely the best beer out of Mercury that I've had so far.
So
we got another one to try.
So you've had the Cisco beers.
Yep.
You don't, are you?
Oh no, I think they're okay. They're very inconsistent. They foam up a lot, and you know, but and I've had, you know, Ipswich and you know, yeah, but this is definitely one of the best that I've had out of there.
All right, here's a question. This is from it's a question from David Geary. He's a brewer in Portland, Maine, and
he
wants to ask this question for a very small brewer. In 1985, there were only 36 breweries, craft breweries in America. Now there's over 1,600. He says, Greg, why do you think you're doing this? Do you think that there's really a market for what you have? And do you think that you're going to make it? That's from an old-time brewer.
It's a great question. And the fact is, everybody now is hanging out a shingle and creating beer, and the competition just keeps increasing and the big guys are starting to figure out this industry. So I have a tremendous amount of concern as to whether I'm going to make it or not, but I don't want to go back behind that desk. So I'm talking to all of the reps and the bar owners and the store owners and every market I go to and trying to hear what they're saying and to figure out what a strategy is that will carry us into the future. I think part of it is that people, because there's so much out there, they don't want just the same old lineup from a brewery. And so what we're going to do is have more of a brew pub mentality, start to, you know, basically relegating some of our products to seasonal status now that, you know, we've got 10 beers and can't keep making them, and just keep making new, different beers.
So no flagship in particular, just sort of constant rotation and...
Exactly. Try to just basically keep looking at what's happening out there and to respond and to put our twist on, you know, what we feel like we'll, you know, people are looking for.
So what are you bringing into New York? I mean, I know you're doing a big event tonight, but what's going to be in the market like right now? Like, what could I order?
Well, we sent a whole truckload of beer, and I worked it out with Union that we're going to be sending as much beer as they can sell for the foreseeable future, as long as they give me a little bit of advance notice. I sent a bunch of beer. I sent Eagle Claw Fist, which is my Imperial Amber, Hoppy Feet, which is our Black IPA, Lubrication, which is an American Black Ale. I sent Tramp Stamp, which is our Belgian IPA. Let's see, what else do we send? Clementine, obviously, which we've got in our glasses here, which is our Belgian wit. We sent some draft and some a very, very small amount of bottles of Muffin Top, which is a Tripel IPA, and Blakehorn Unidragon, which is a Russian Imperial Stout. So
which I probably we're drinking right now.
Yeah, I think I sent 8 or 9 different beers into the market.
It's a Russian Imperial Stout, you said?
It is, yes.
What's the name?
12%. You said, I think, earlier.
It's 12.5%. It's called Blakehorn Unidragon, which is a goofy name. A few of us were joking about what we would call our Russian Imperial Stout one day, and we thought, well, how about Black Unicorn or how about Soul Dragon? And they didn't sound right. And then someone made the astute comment, well, if we combine those two things, we'd have the ultimate mythical creature. And no one knew what to call it. And all of a sudden, the name just popped into my mind, Blakehorn Unidragon. And we've got the fire breathing unicorn black dragon on the label, looking goofy and ferocious at the same time, and that's kind of what we're about.
This is pretty good. I mean, it finishes really dry, and I don't taste a lot of I don't taste the alcohol.
Well, the dryness, I love that you pointed that out. Most American stouts are so sweet for my personal palate, and it just kind of overpowers me, and I kind of like what, you know, some of the foreign export stouts that I've come across and what they're doing in Europe with some of the bigger stouts. So we kind of took a European angle on this. We've got a little bit of teeny little bit of smoked Scottish malt in there, peated malt, and basically we brew at a lower brew temperature than most people would brew a Russian Imperial Stout, which keeps that dryness in there and doesn't add that goopy sweetness to it.
Very good. What do you think, Jimmy?
I like it. You know, it hits the right flavor profiles. It's hitting my palate the way I like. I'm enjoying it.
You know, good.
It's a little roasty finish.
Yeah.
It's kind of bringing in the fall, too. I mean, we're in New York City. It's pretty warm here. It's like 75 degrees.
I was going to say, it's not...
We got the AC on, but, you know, go a few hours north. You know, I want to talk more about Vermont. Come on.
Oh, man, we're like... When I left Monday morning at dawn, and it was 38 degrees. But I mean, it's supposed, like last week, it was 85 degrees. It was too warm, and the leaves were kind of muddy. You know, the foliage was kind of muddy. It needs that cold snap to really kind of brighten up and get those colors. And so, and then we had a huge windstorm and blew all the leaves off the trees. So it's kind of it's ending up around me, but we're finally getting some cold.
But up there, don't you? You said you have the trend of these real little guys making. You know,
oh, you mean beer? Yeah.
Yeah,
beer. I thought you were curious about foliage.
Well, I'd drive up for it.
All right. Yeah, I'd love to see you in Vermont. You have to come up. Yeah, no, we've got, there's a lot of really great stuff. In fact, I probably shouldn't even say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. A friend of mine's doing a new brewery up there. He used to be at the Norwich Inn. He was the head brewer there, Jasper Murdoch. And his name's Patrick Dakin. And he was doing a brew pub in South Royalton, which is a town very close to me. And now he just sent me an email saying that it's going to be a production brewery. I think he's only got a 2-barrel system, so small. And, you know, he does English-style ales. And so that's like, you know, just hopefully open in the next 2 months. The Alchemist, I'm actually bringing down 20 cases of the Heady Topper for a fundraiser for because of the hurricane, which will be November 6th. We'll have that.
At Blind Tiger?
At Blind Tiger. Yep.
Awesome.
It's a Sunday. And that's when we do our farm-to-bar event, when our CSA, the guys that run our CSA in our town all come down. It's the end of their season. Their CSA is over. And they're all freaking, they just want to
party.
Dudes with beards. Tons of, and like all their bearded friends come down.
I know, in Barnard, Vermont, there's a, next to the train station, there's an old kind of, what is it, barn? With doors on both sides. And
yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, I heard the story. You can learn more about the barn in Barnard, Vermont.
Yeah.
November 6th.
Exactly.
Blind Tiger.
Yeah.
We just did a great event, too, up in, we're up in the Catskills.
Oh, I mean, did you go to that Glenwood?
We didn't do Glenwood. We did Pig Mountain. Pig Mountain, and we were in Jeffersonville, which is the heart of Sullivan County. You know, same thing as we are in Vermont. It's beautiful. And there's a small distillery starting up. A guy named Dana Ball, who used to work for Union Beer, he's starting a small brewery in Livingston Manor. So there's going to be a little bit of kind of Vermont-like action up there.
Yeah.
But Omegang came down and hooked us up for the event.
Oh, nice.
They did a great job. And that's the closest thing to local beer up there.
So you didn't make it up to Glenwood. Do you know anybody that went up yesterday?
I didn't go to Glenwood for the kickoff for Cider Week, but I'm sure it was excellent because they're such supporters of, all things farm and local and apples and all that.
Yeah.
That's why we have Cider Week. But Cider Week's cool. And you know what? On that note, man, I could talk about Cider Week all night. And we did last week. I'm going to plug last week's show because we had Christian Drouin from Normandy, France. Greg Hall from Chicago.
So he is making cider.
He's starting a cider project, and I expect a lot from him. Yeah. And, of course, the dean of them all, Steve Woods from Farnham Hill in New Hampshire.
Was on the phone?
We did phone, some live guests. It was the ultimate cider show. I mean, you just talk to those three guys, and that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
So, hey, let's raise our glasses to cider, because cider. Tomorrow night at Jimmy's 43, we're doing a little pairing dinner, too. So, all right, we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. All right, here we are in the middle of Cider Week in New York City. Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger and Greg from, I'm going to say your name again. It's Clown, what's the name of your brewery?
Clown Shoes Beer.
Clown Shoes Beer. I want to call it Clowns for Shoes. Clowns for Shoes. Well, you guys were just talking about something cool. I didn't even know what it was. Tell us about it.
All the good things happen
when we're off the air.
Yeah.
It was something about Heady Toppers and
Farnham
Hill ciders.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about cider a little bit.
Yeah, but Greg was saying that he's going to get some of the Alchemist beers down in Massachusetts.
Well, potentially. I got a call yesterday from Jen.
From Jen.
I'm going to go up there probably not next week, but the week after, and talk about the particulars. It looks like they'll be making the gluten-free saison that they produce at Mercury. And potentially, you know, they may bring some Heady Topper into Mass as well. So that was just a really cool call that I got yesterday out of the blue.
Yeah, they've been. I know they're getting in some more fermenters, and because originally they were just going to do Vermont, and so it's good to hear that that maybe they'll start spreading it around. Maybe it'll come to New York. That would be really great.
It would be good.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about the culture of beer in Massachusetts, because we got a few of the small breweries here. But it's not quite like you hear about Vermont. There's other states that seem like they have this cult, you know, of small breweries. I mean, what is it like up in Massachusetts? Other brewers, what's the vibe?
It's a great question. I mean, it was a pretty dry, pardon the pun, town for a while in terms of small guys that were trying to make artisanal beers. You know, we have the huge guys, Sam Adams and Harpoon. But I would say Dan Paquette kind of started something in Massachusetts with Pretty Things, to give him all the credit and due, and inspired me on some levels. And, you know, I think that we were really the second company to come in and really be aggressive in Massachusetts and now go out to some other states. But what's happening is that it's, you know, like a renaissance in Massachusetts, and there are probably 7 to 10 guys I can think of that are starting either brew pubs, small production breweries, some type of operations where they're making artisanal craft beer. So it's pretty awesome. And the whole scene is transforming. There used to be 20 maybe bars in the whole state that did a good job with our beers, with any type of high quality beer like what we're trying to produce. And that's just expanding, and you're even seeing places that don't normally use craft beer starting to add good local beer. So it's coming around.
That's totally true from my perspective. I mean, I went to school in Western Massachusetts, and at the time, there was nothing, like absolutely nothing. And now it's like, you know, people like Kuzme and folks doing Wandering Star is coming up, and other things going on, you know, both in Western Mass and in the Boston area. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's kind of on either side of the state, it seems like, in Turner's Falls, you know, on the western side, and then right around Boston.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a big controversy last month where they were going to change the licensing for breweries? Did you hear about that, Greg?
Well, it's basically the ABCC trying to dig deeper into the pockets of, you know, the local brewers, and it got shot out of the water really quickly. They probably could have had a compromise. Rob, the owner of Mercury, is the head of the Mass Brewers Guild, and basically what they were realizing is that their guys paying, you know, basically pennies, you know, for their license, effectively, you know, like well under $1,000, and then their larger facilities that are paying thousands of dollars, and they tried to put everybody in that thousands of dollars category, and people freaked out that, you know, they lobbied and they crushed it, whereas in reality, they probably could have come up with a compromise and, you know, basically come up with a fee based on the size of the brewery so that there'd be a sliding scale. But I was kind of pleased to see it.
Did you hear
die.
About that, Dave?
No, I didn't hear about it.
It was something about that so many of the breweries in Massachusetts are licensed under as like a farm brewery. Mm-hmm. Is that the term?
Yeah, that's what it is.
They said even Boston Beer, which is Sam Adams and Harpoon, their license is also issued as a farm brewery. But then they were saying, well, if you're a farm brewer, you have to be growing your own hops and wheat. I know that Wandering Star went through that, and they actually made their own a special batch of locally grown hops and wheats.
Yeah.
I don't know. It suddenly it came out of nowhere, and everyone in New York was talking about it. I don't think anybody in Massachusetts even knew about it.
No, definitely the folks that do what I do were quite aware of it. But we really feel like it was a revenue-driven, agenda by the Alcohol Beverage Control Commission in Massachusetts.
This is going to be going on in every single state. I mean, they're also desperate for cash. And, of course, they go after alcohol because they see it sort of as a safe bet. It's like a sin tax.
Exactly.
And so it's something that everyone's going to have to be aware of, I think, going forward, because they are all looking for money and ways to raise it. So, and craft beer is growing and it's gaining in popularity. Mm-hmm. So they're going to see it as a source of revenue.
What do people, going back to Massachusetts, in your area, let's say Ipswich or what are some of the towns near you where people buy your beer?
Well, I'd say the greatest spots to find clients use beer are Somerville and Cambridge. But we're all over the state. I mean, you can find...
Let me know a couple of the bars
A couple of the bars.
I'm going to go up to Massachusetts next week. Maybe I want to check out your beer.
Well, Clementine has been on at Deep Ellum, which I think is probably the most credible.
I love that place.
It's a fantastic bar. Max does an unbelievable job with that. We've had that beer on, and he doesn't leave beers on. He just likes it that much. Since we first made the beer a year and a half ago at this point, Sunset is an amazing bar as well in Alston, where they've got about 100 draft lines, and there's always Clown Shoes on there as well. Cambridge Common in Cambridge, Red Bones in Somerville, Foundry and Elm in Somerville, Five Horses Tavern. I mean, there's so many wonderful little bars in those towns that are running with our stuff and other local things at this point.
Those are the main scenes. It's like Alston, Cambridge, and Somerville.
Yeah, I would say that for us, I mean, that's where the heart of it is.
All right. And then what do they charge for a pint? Like a basic pint of your beer?
And anywhere from $4 to $6, generally speaking. On the real, real high end, maybe $7, unless it's one of the higher alcohol beers, which then God knows what they might do for a teeny little glass. People get crazy.
You going up there next week?
I am. I'm going up next week.
What are you
going
to do?
I'm from Haverhill, Massachusetts.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we have some
that.
Friends. We put together an idea called Shoe Town to Brew Town. Our town was an old shoe factory town.
Yeah, you and there's a guy says we meetings.
Yeah, we want to go up and check out the town, and we'll have some meetings. And you know, I'm not really interested in running a brewery myself, but there's some people who are, and it, you know, there's different ways to go with it. That's why it's interesting to talk about this.
Shoe Town to Clown Shoes.
Yeah, you can have Brew Town. This is a serious conversation. You got brew pubs. You've got you know, contract breweries, but then you can have things in between too. You know, there's no reason you couldn't have a brewery where you actually have a job training. You know, you have a green industry going on. You've
it used
got, you
to
know,
be an apprentice.
Yeah,
kind of,
and
thing.
It can be a model for the whole community. So that's kind of what we're going to go pitch.
I mean, for a lot of communities, it is like the center, you know, smaller communities. You know, it's a source of jobs. And
I mean, you know, pub owners and brewers used to be community leaders. And we used to talk about that with Ray Dieter a lot. He would say in New Orleans, as a bar owner, he was considered a community leader.
Right.
So there are places where that still matters.
Yep.
So I don't know, but that's what I'm trying to figure out. What is Massachusetts about? Because Massachusetts is a tricky state. You know, there's a lot of laws. It's an old industrial state. There's a lot of education. There's a lot of taxes. And we've got our friends up in Hooksett, New Hampshire, Bill Herlicka from White Birch. He seems to be doing fine. You got guys. What's it like in Vermont? Are there a lot of taxes, or is it pretty hands off, or what?
There's definitely some taxes, but it's not too bad. I don't think. And they're pretty hands off. Definitely, a lot of places are opening up, so it can't be too bad. And most of them seem to be doing pretty well. Hmm. I don't think it's as bad as some places.
Yeah, no, I'm wondering about Massachusetts. To me, seems like there's places like, you know, there's Boston. You said Somerville, Austin, Cambridge. That's all Boston, and some places out west. But for the most part, you think that most people in Massachusetts are interested in craft beer?
I think it's a real growing segment, and I didn't mean to marginalize the whole scene. I mean, you can go anywhere from Amesbury to Lee to Storybridge. I mean, you can find great craft beer and craft beer bars all throughout Massachusetts at this point. It's just the hub of activity for Clown Shoes is in that little area. I really think it's kind of a stodgy community that's slow to change, and that's why we probably weren't at the forefront of this movement. But people are catching on, and you know, because they're educated, and you know, you taste a beer that doesn't have a lot of heart put into it, and you taste one that does, you know, people can see the difference, and they're starting to get hip to it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cool. You guys have any questions? John, does the panel have any questions for our new brewer here?
Any plans for further New Jersey expansion?
Yeah, I mean, eventually we will fully develop markets where we've kind of taken a step into. But I really want to have people that can work those markets and do the right things. So we've sent small amounts of beer to some places just to kind of get it there and to make it available. And, you know, but eventually, yes, absolutely, New Jersey will be a market we focus on. And maybe a year or 2 years from now, I'm not sure when.
Will you ever think of building a brewery, or are you just going to sort of stay contract?
I'm happy with how things are. Mercury is looking to move into a new facility where they're going to triple production, and they're likely to give me a contract to cover, you know, more barrels than I'll know what to do with in the foreseeable future. I don't have experience, you know, running a brewery, buying the grain, and hiring the people, and dealing with all of the nuts and bolts of that. I have a lot of experience in marketing and sales and in beer itself. So I'm sort of pleased with how things are laid out right now.
And how do you, I asked this to Dan Paquette too, when he was on the show, how do you develop when you don't have like a, I mean, you do kind of have a place, it's at Mercury, but when you don't have a physical place that people can really visit to sort of see who you are, how do you develop that sense of place, that sense of loyalty, that kind of community spirit?
Well, we have our unique flavor. I mean, I think if you look at all the different people in the industry, everyone's got their own personality. Ours is, you know, kind of on the edge. I'm a quirky guy, and, you know, I'm trying to have fun with this. So, you know, we try to be playful and to engage people's imaginations. And I think that's why it's so polarizing. Some people absolutely love us, and some people think we're the dumbest folks on earth. And I guess I'm okay with that.
Are there any particular styles that you're thinking about going towards in terms of, you know, are you coming up with something new and exciting?
Well, that's a good question. There's one specific thing that I've got test batches, rolling a few 5 gallon batches, which I'll try when I get back home. I really like adding fruit flavors a few of our beers, but we've only done it with organic clementine extract and sweet orange peel are the two things that we've been successful with. And I'm not a huge fan of a lot of the fruit beers in the market, so we're experimenting with freeze-dried fruit. I've got three pale ales, 5-gallon batches, one with pineapple, one with blueberry, and one with mango. And if you've ever tried freeze-dried fruit, it's got a real interesting consistency to it, and it's very intense, and it's kind of sucked out a lot of the junk. So I have no idea what's going to happen, but I want to figure out one way or another an innovative way to get fruit flavor into some beers.
Dave, any suggestions?
About how to do that?
Yeah. You're supposed to know everything.
Yeah. I don't know that.
Well, I'll tell you all this thing that didn't happen on the show tonight. We'll give her a shout out. It was Massachusetts night, so we had Jeremy Goldberg from Cape Ann Brewing was coming, but he's been delayed. And he will be tonight, though, at Burp Castle for the New York City Homebrewers Guild at 7:30. Many of you, by the time you hear the show, you won't know that, but he's going to be in New York. And we were waiting for him, but he wasn't able to make it. And anything to say about Cape Ann Brewing? I mean, they're not too far from Ipswich. Ipswich is Cape Ann in Gloucester, Mass.
Yeah, Gloucester, they're in Gloucester. Yeah.
And I was actually up there on. I went in late at night in August, and it was a cool place. It's right on the water, beautiful spot. I mean, it was dark, so I couldn't really see, but it's a really nice facility, pretty big, brew house, mm-hmm. and making some pretty good beers.
It said on the notes that Jeremy has to allow lobstermen to store traps on their property of the brewery. That's kind
of
cool.
Yeah, they got a lot of that.
I also know that Cape Ann was featured in Paul Kermazian's American Beer.
That's right.
Yeah.
I just the other night had at Paul's Barcade, I had Fisherman's Pumpkin Stout that they tapped directly out of a pumpkin. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've had that too. That's fantastic. I've seen that at a few events.
How did they do that?
I don't know. I didn't ask. But it was just a glorious thing to look at, let alone taste. It was really good.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they make the beer in there or not. I know there are people that actually they'll basically use the pumpkins as cast. I don't know if they basically done that kind of thing, basically poured it in and altered it, essentially.
One year we did during pumpkin time, Sam Calgione came up with the idea of doing, he hollowed out like 100 gourds and we used that as a glass and served it to the customers. And everybody got so drunk and they started throwing them at each other. And it was like the biggest, drunkest food fight. We were cleaning gourds off the walls for like weeks. So, and actually we have Sam tomorrow night with no gourds.
Don't bring your gourd.
Don't bring your gourd.
This is a pretty fun show. So is that your thing tomorrow night, Dave?
That is. Yeah, he's bringing up some crazy stuff. I mean, like stuff from the brew pub and Faithful Ale, that thing that he did for Pearl Jam. Apparently Pearl Jam, they love beer and they love Pinot Noir. So Sam tried to create a hybrid between the two. And with black currants.
So Sam Calagione, Dogfish Head at Blind Tiger tomorrow night. And Greg, what are you doing tonight? You're going to a New York City Good Beer Seal Bar.
Yeah, I'll be at Rattle and Hum as soon as I can get over there.
All right. And Emily, anything going on this week with your special group, Tapped?
We have a private event going on tomorrow night down at Littletown.
All right. And John, anything we should know about with Beertography?
You can check out beertography.com, and if you have any beer photos that you think are cool, send them my way, and try to feature them on the site.
All right, and go to ciderweek.com. It's Cider Week. Cider Week's not Beer Week. Cider Week's about just starting to learn about local small farmers that could or are making cider. It's a way to save farms, and you know what? It's a good product. Last year, one of my favorite ciders was made in Barnard, Vermont. It was local guys with Dave Broderick. You had the fresh pressed cider. You guys put it in barrels, aged it for a year. Like nothing I've bought. And I think cider's got a long way to go, and people are just figuring that out. And October 20th, Browery Lane, another good Brazil bar. Pretty Things, Bobby Yaga launch, talking about Dan Paquette and Pretty Things. That was cool. I'm glad you mentioned that, Greg. I think that Dan Paquette's influencing a lot of people, and we really love his beers. And I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com. Thanks again, and thanks to goodbeerseal.com. Again, you can follow us on Twitter, and thanks to all these things, I don't know what I'm saying. Thanks to Dave, John, Emily, Matt, Greg, and Jeremy for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator, Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow.
me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Whiskey's too rough, champagne costs too much, vodka puts my mouth in gear. This little refrain should help me explain. As a matter of fact, I like beer.
He likes beer.
My wife often frowns when we're out on the town, and I'm wearing suit.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. As a part of National Food Day, St. John's Bread and Life, Brooklyn's innovative and life-saving food service program based in Bedford-Stuyvesant, is inviting Brooklyn chefs and purveyors to learn about how the organization is marrying the procurement of old-fashioned, locally grown organic produce with the latest technology to deliver healthy, cost-effective meals to those in need. St. John's Bread and Life, located at 795 Lexington Avenue, will hold an open house on Monday, October 24th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Visit www.foodday.org to sign up for the event. The following message has been brought to you by Taste Brooklyn. Our city's finest chefs partner with farmers and local vineyards next to the Green Market for an extraordinary outdoor culinary festival. Try exquisite delicacies using locally grown seasonal delights on the plaza outside Brooklyn's Borough Hall. Top chefs and artisans will offer sumptuous fare paired with premium wines, all to empower our neediest children to get healthy. The mighty FDNY and DSNY harbor their own culinary masters in uniform. They will cook off against the pros. Sample delicious cuisine without stressing over a reservation while supporting a worthy cause. Taste Brooklyn's Feel to Fork Outdoor Culinary Festival, Saturday, October 15th, 2011, from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Learn more and buy tickets at tastesofbrooklyn.blogspot.com. That's TASTESOFBrooklyn.blogspot.com.